I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
We are back yet again. Welcome back once again to the Pedestrian Podcast, still the only unofficial UK Seahawks podcast. Myself, Stuart Court, is as ever joined by Mr. Ross Bell and Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, guys?
Good, mate. Good to be back.
Yeah, Adam?
Yeah, it feels like only a week ago we were doing the last podcast. But obviously not. How strange.
Yeah, all very weird. Enjoying the off-season, guys?
Oh, it's long, isn't it?
It's a bit long. It's a bit dry. Adam?
Yeah, I could sort of do with proper sport coming back around now, to be honest.
I mean, normally football's back in like 3 weeks, isn't it?
The football league. Thank God for that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, 4 weeks for good teams.
Yeah, the massive game of Coventry City against Notts County is just 3 weeks away. So yeah, we did, as Adam alluded to, we did try to do all of this last week, but technical gremlins got the better of us. It was an absolute blinder though, wasn't it, Adam?
That part, yeah, I mean, are we going to have to say the same things again? Because, I mean, I'm not sure I'm capable of such fire 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, and that part where Pete Carroll jumped on especially was Pete Pedestrian Podcast, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was such a nice bloke. It's a shame that we couldn't share that with the rest of the group.
Yeah. We were, though, as we mentioned on the lost one, called out by brethren over on the Seahawkers pod. Thoughts on that 12-on-12 crime, Russ?
I can see their point, but I think it's much easier for them to record. It's three of us. It's much more tricky to get us all together to record at the same time.
Yeah. Adam?
I mean, they live in Montana, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, there can't be a lot else to do in Montana. So you probably have to say that, you know, ultimately they're doing themselves a favour, whereas we're doing you listeners a favour by recording. So that's probably the flip side.
Yeah, I think I'll wholeheartedly agree. They're out in Big Sky and we're over here. So this week we will go over all the Seahawks off-season chatter and topics, get to some of your questions that are now a week old, and set the table for the 2017 Seahawks and Pedestrian Podcast season. But first, a few notes of thanks. First off, to everyone who showed up and got involved with the 2017 National Meet in Nottingham a couple of months ago. Now, really fun, if not a very beer-laden day and night, where the chapter raised £1,200 for our two chapter charities for 2017, the SSAFA and Archie's Smiles. Some funny moments in that, with people bidding for things their significant others did not want them to cash. Also was good to meet Ross there too. Apparently all three of us are unable to be in the same room at the same time. So yeah, it's just like Beetlejuice. But it's a good night, wasn't it, Ross?
Yeah, it's brilliant. It took me about 35 minutes to walk back to my hotel 5 minutes away. So always good.
That's quite impressive. Also a thanks to everyone who listened, commented and enjoyed as much as we did the John Moffat interview from a few weeks ago. It was the last one we did, and we just clearly wanted to bask in that podcast glow, really. It was really eye-opening, some of the point of views that John had, and was, as I say, fun to do. So thanks if you downloaded or got in touch about that one. If you haven't, it's the pin post on my Twitter, I think, and it's definitely the pin post on the Seahawkers UK, which is at Seahawkers UK Twitter profile as well. But now for this pod, now I almost wanted to record immediately once the news broke, but a couple of months ago the Seahawks had in two quarterbacks for a workout: Austin Davis, formerly of the Browns, Broncos and Rams, and Mr. Colin Kaepernick came to town for workout and conversations, and the team, through something I can make no sense of, signed Austin Davis. Adam?
Well, this, I can remember what I said on the last podcast, and it's just an astonishing waste of money. There will be discussions about whether Kaepernick is the right guy, the wrong guy, not, you know, not perfect, whatever. But, and maybe he is completely out of the equation, but I would rather give the money to a player that can be of use to the team than someone who we pretty much know for a fact, if we need him, will not be able to get the job done. So, yeah. All in all, it seems like just a waste of close to $1 million of valuable cap space for basically no reason when you could probably just as well keep someone like Jake Heaps and see if he can do it as opposed to having a guy who you know can't do it.
Yeah, wholeheartedly agree. Austin Davis signed a one-year contract with the Seahawks, paying him $775,000 in a base salary of a $855,000 deal. It's just an absolute waste of money. The Kaepernick discussion and debate and fit for the Seahawks goes a lot deeper than Austin Davis. But Austin Davis, as I said last week, wasn't good enough to hang around at the Browns, the Rams, and the Broncos, who, apart from a couple of weeks of Peyton Manning, have had no quarterback for 3 years, pretty much. And this just, it makes no sense, even 6 weeks down the line, even with OTAs, where he didn't really seem to grab anyone's attention. And if they really wanted to, obviously Trevor Boykins had some off-field issues this off-season with, was it a car accident he had or something in January? This is not the way to put pressure on Kaepernick, would have put pressure and really just makes way more sense. Ross?
Yeah, Austin Davis has played 13 games in his career. He's thrown 13 touchdowns and 13 interceptions. He's fumbled 7 times. That's not going to put any pressure on anyone.
No, well, he's better than Case Keenum, who someone suggested we should sign. So
I don't think he is.
Well,
win loss record.
Win loss record. Touchdown interception ratio is better than Case Keenum, I think. But yeah, the Kaepernick thing. There is someone which people suggested in the dead of the off season that the team were worried about the pressure he could put on Russell Wilson, not only on field but off field, and his popularity in the locker room. Do you think there's any weight to that, Adam?
Possibly. I would imagine that Kaepernick is the kind of guy who would be, I don't know, I mean, if you're Richard Sherman, for the sake of argument, I imagine you may have more in common or gravitate slightly towards someone like Kaepernick, who seems a lot more of an honest and raw person than Russell the Robot Wilson. But I don't really know. It's quite a difficult one to equate, really. We'll probably get onto Russell Wilson's further transformation into just a weird later on. But I don't know. I mean, if it is, then it's a shame. And it's obviously every quarterback gets pampered by the front office, but this would be an over-pampering, I would suggest, if they're that worried about something like that.
Yeah, I agree. Russ?
Yes, over-pampering to a team's detriment. If Russ goes down again, as much as I like Boykin, I'd rather have Kaepernick really to step on. That's an instant upgrade to anyone else that's out there. He probably is more popular, but so what?
Yeah, exactly. But also with the Kaepernick-Boykin thing, if that was the way they went, Richard Sherman says so often, I think Will Thomas said as well, iron sharpens iron. If you've got Colin Kaepernick pushing Trevor Boykin, it's only going to be to the benefit, you'd think, if Boykin is mentally tough, as he certainly appeared to be, some of the stuff he put up with at TCU, that it would fit that iron sharpens iron, always compete and stuff. This just isn't competing. This is having your quarterback on a different stratosphere to your backup quarterback, really. And it just doesn't really make sense.
I also feel like, don't you owe it as a front office to the veterans and the team in the team, like Jimmy Graham, Michael Bennett, Cam Chancellor, who I would say the three of them could be entering their last top season as a Seahawk. Do you not owe it to them that if Wilson does get injured, you know, breaks a finger and can't play a week, do you not owe it to those guys to have a guy that's capable of backing up and, you know, putting in a performance that you would expect of a Seahawk, as opposed to this just tomato can who is going to lose you a game? It feels disrespectful to the rest of the team.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. There's a lot of talk about windows, obviously, after the Super Bowl 49 and stuff, and this just doesn't seem to widen it. I mean, Colin Kaepernick's not the greatest quarterback in the world, far from it, but just everything that you just lay it all on the table, it just makes absolutely no sense. I'm starting to get angry again, as I was when Austin Davis signed. OTAs were a few weeks ago. Adam went on a bit of a rant about this last week. Ross, are they worth much, all the stuff that comes out of it? Obviously, Tom Cable, yet again, for the 17th consecutive year is excited about our outline. That's something, isn't it?
It's Tom Cable's time of the year, isn't it? It's when he gets to do his talking and gets to pump up these guys. Like I said last week, the guys are in shorts. They're not really doing, they're not playing football. They're just running routes and not doing anything else. Apart from that, it's just a bit of a waste of time. I suppose it's good to get rookies around some of the veterans, but a lot of them don't even show up.
Yeah. So, last week I asked Adam from left to right. Adam, do I rehash who you think your left to right is and if it's changed in the last 6 days?
Well, we discussed, I may have got it wrong, but my left to right for the first game, I don't think this will be there necessarily for the whole way.
Yeah.
I think you've got Fant, definitely. Jokel, assuming he's fit, left guard, Britt, and then I think Ibushi, who will eventually be replaced by Pošić, and then Ifedi at right tackle.
Yeah, that's my five without Ibushi. I think Pošić would be, it'd be Pošić or Ifedi either way around on the right hand side. Russ?
Yeah, same left side, same centre. I've got Glinski at right guard and then Ifedi pushed out to right tackle. But either of those combinations is definitely feasible.
Yeah, obviously, talking to Justin Britt on the offensive line, Pro Football Focus a couple of days ago gave him the title of the secret superstar for the Seahawks, 98.3 pass block efficiency. Damn. It ranked 7 of in the 28 center for centers last year. I don't know how there was only 28 centers and 32 teams, but never mind. Maybe that's where we go wrong. We're playing one too many linemen. Maybe we need to play less and give more of a chance. But yeah, on Justin Britt, obviously he's entering a contract year. They drafted Pošić and the other guy from the UFA, restricted for 2018, Jimmy Graham. They didn't go all out and draft a tight end, which was a ridiculously deep tight end class as well. Is it all going to change again in 12 months' time with Britt, Adam?
No, I think Britt is you. I wouldn't be extending him now. I would be waiting to see what happens with him this season. And if the worst comes to the worst, you franchise tag him the following year. There's not going to be anyone else you're going to want to put on the franchise tag, I wouldn't have thought. So, yeah, I would do that as opposed to putting all your eggs in one basket for a player that we don't know if he's going to, if last year was an outlier or is going to be what he actually is.
Yeah, Russ?
Yeah, complete agreement. Yeah, last year could just be a one-off. But if he does get to test the market, then I'm sure we compete for that kind of position with the rest of the teams in the league as well.
Yeah, I agree. It's just there is a lot. There might just be something to the Ethan Pošić because he did play a lot of time for a good running team as well. Obviously, he had Fournette and Grice, which is just ridiculous in college ball at running back. But they were a really good running team. They couldn't do a lot else on offense, LSU, but they could run the ball.
Saying that franchise tag number for an offensive lineman is $14 million. I forgot that the centers don't have their own number. That is very high. I mean, I still wouldn't be extending him because you've got Hunt, you've got Pošić if necessary. So I don't know. And then if he's really good, you'll pay him.
Yeah. And also, he's the thing with franchise tag, that would be higher than possibly what he's going to get unless he really does become the second coming of like Kevin Maguire or something like that. I don't really see how they can give him 14
million. Can't reasonably accept anywhere near 14 million, can he?
No. But it will be interesting to watch and see what happens to the offensive line group. For me, there is no question that this group on paper is a lot deeper and a lot better off than it was 12 months ago. The NFL, with the season now just 6 or 7 weeks away, have made quite a few rule changes, but they have made a couple which really caught my eye. The first one, they've changed the ruling on overtime. It's now instead of a 15-minute period, it's now a 10-minute period. Russ?
What's the point of that? If you don't want them to play overtime, just scrap it. What is the point of just taking 5 minutes off? There's no effect at all.
Yeah, it's just going to lead to more ties. It's going to lead to teams going quicker at it in those 10 minutes. It's going to lead to more desperation. The more desperation leads to more players flying through the air at people's heads and knees and stuff. Adam?
Yeah, I don't understand. I mean, in no way can this make you more likely to get a result. So it just seems completely senseless. Just go to the college system if if that's what you really if you're looking at player safety, it just doesn't, which is arguably more exciting than what we have currently anyway, because there's still so much situational football that teams play that actually you only really get, you know, 10 minutes of real football, and the last 5 minutes is situational anyway. So this way is going to be even less.
Yeah.
It could lead to even really, really boring overtime. So one team just drives the ball for 9.5 minutes, kicks a field goal and wins like that.
Yeah, but there's not many teams who can drive the ball for 9.5 minutes, which is how... I mean, we saw that in Arizona. This is the infamous 6-6. But yeah, the other one which really caught my attention was the fact that there is now no cut down to 72 or 75 or whatever the cut down was from 90. It's just a swift 90 to 53, which, as I said last week, Adam, it's going to make even the week four of preseason even more of a car crash, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't really understand this, because we said, you know, you have to fill these positions with crap players ultimately who are never going to have a chance. And that first cut down is sort of seems sensible because you get rid of the dross. You know, obviously no one, they're all amazing athletes or whatever, but it's very rare that someone that gets cut from the 90 to a 75, I would imagine, and, you know, goes on to have an amazing career. Whereas, I don't know, you know, you'd sort of feel sorry if someone like Kenny Lawler loses a rep in the fourth preseason game because they've got to accommodate some guy who has no chance. So I don't know. I mean, any, even then, can you still only name 53 for the roster for the game?
Yeah, and there's still, you can't have all 53 active either. So I think that's something Pete Carroll, I think Belichick has been pushing for as well, that they don't have an inactive list. If you've got 53 players,
in the preseason game, how many active players can you have?
Also, I think don't do an inactive list in preseason. They just tell the press who isn't going to play. So they just say.
So you could feasibly have 90 people.
Yeah, dressed and ready. Yeah.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
That's mad.
Somewhat balmy, but yeah, it's just changing rules for changing rules' sake. Obviously, they've relaxed their celebration rules because there shouldn't be any rules against celebration. Obviously, Chad Johnson took it a bit far when he put jackets on the sideline after touchdowns, but it's all good natured fun. If you really are worried about how players are celebrating, Josh Brown should get a job again in the NFL. Players and people like that. There is a question that I am working on an article over on Pro Football Spot. Still, it's taken a while because of other commitments. Does important mean best? Last year we saw with Earl Thomas most glaringly that just because he's not our best player in the universal stakes, he clearly could be the most important. And obviously Dave Demeshek, as Adam pointed out last week, has a good way of describing a piece like Earl, Adam.
Yeah, so what he does is you take away the quarterback because you presume that the quarterback is the most important player, and then you say that the Jenga piece is the piece that if you take him out of the, when you're playing the game Jenga, the piece that you take out causes the whole tower to collapse. So Earl Thomas, he declared, was not only our Jenga piece, but he was the most important Jenga piece in the whole league, which is an interesting comment.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree with that. Would you, Russ? But Thomas is the biggest one in the league, most important one.
He is the best safety in the league, in my opinion, and you take him away from any team. I mean, we saw the stats, what, over a touchdown more per game without him in the lineup last day.
Yeah. Adam?
I think I probably agree. He's, having seen what we've seen, I wouldn't like to lose Wagner, and I wouldn't like to lose Michael Bennett either, although we have won games without him in the past. But I think in terms of the way it allows us to play, and in terms of how hard he must be to replace without getting the number of reps that he would need to sort of understand and appreciate the position, I think he probably is our most important player in that regard.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd also agree that because you're important, it also means you should be in the conversation for the best player on the team as well. And I think Earl Thomas shows that more than any other player in the league. But moving on, something that me and Adam have had quite a few WhatsApp conversations over the course of the off-season about. Russell Wilson's transformation into Adam refers to as a weird, is really, really picking up pace. If people, listeners, remember when we lost the most annoying part of this last season from Russell Wilson was after the New Orleans Saints loss when he overthrew Jermaine Kearse in the back of the end zone. Jermaine Kearse did brilliantly to catch the ball and try and get 2 feet down, but he overthrew. And Russell Wilson says nothing. Adam, how was Russell Wilson Instagram last week when his anniversary came up?
Yeah, well, I think there was something like he had a plane fly by with an "I love you" message. It's all well and good, but I just don't think anyone actually cares about that. And we all would love to know more about what he thinks about actual football as opposed to the stock answers that we get that no one really cares about.
Yeah, I really do think there's an article which caught both my and Adam's attention a few weeks ago, which is just an absolute PR puff piece on Russell Wilson. He's just a higher character, it seems, in Seattle that isn't allowed to be dismissed or degraded or criticised. And when he does some of the things on his Instagram, like his Facebook lives when he's going to eat a dinner just so people can see how he gets reactions when he walks in the Met, it's just like Adam says, no one really gives a damn. Just play better and don't overthrow average wide receivers, please. Russ?
Well, yeah, he's a management dream, isn't he? But I'd much rather have Brett Favre and his personality as our quarterback than I do Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
A real guy who just likes to, like a cowboy who likes to drink beer and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, the person who gets most often referred to Wilson is Andrew Locke. And just watching Andrew Locke, I was talking at the pub on Sunday about him. He's just an absolute geek. And he's so awkward. And someone said that even when he did the NFL UK things a couple of years ago in a room of 100, 200 people, he is legitimately that awkward. It's not show, but everything from Russell Wilson off the field just seems to be micromanaged in every part of it. I mean, yeah, all the children's hospital visits, they are really cool, and he is a very, very, very good quarterback, but just...
Yeah, we're not knocking any of the stuff he does. It's great.
No. Just loosen the strings a little.
I just don't get why. Who's advising him this is the best way to be? That's what I don't understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a quote a few months ago from Michael Bennett, which is almost anti-Russell Wilson, where Michael Bennett was talking about the Tom Brady jersey situation after the Super Bowl, where he said, "We still don't know who killed Tupac and Biggie, but they found Tom Brady's jersey." I mean, that would never come from Russell Wilson, but the fact that it comes from Michael Bennett, the way that Michael Bennett is looked upon compared to Russell Wilson on off-the-field persona stakes, it's night and day, isn't it? And
I think Bennett said that wearing the Colin Kaepernick T-shirt as well, didn't he?
Yeah, no, you're right and all that stuff, yeah. But it's just loosen up a bit, Bruce. You really, really are quite annoying.
Andrew Luck, though, and that NFL UK thing, when he was on stage with Neil Reynolds, he was more awkward than Neil Reynolds and more geeky. And he's an NFL quarterback.
It's Stanford, though, isn't it? I mean, Stanford, when you look at Sherman and Baldwin, then you say, "Why did Andrew Luck come from the same school?" What?
Yeah, but Sherman dressed up as Harry Potter last year.
Yeah, so it's they're a strange bunch, but I mean, yeah, it's just quite annoying, really. Pro Football Focus, over the course of the off season, because they're clearly suffering as well, have put out quite a few 2016 and longer stats, as we just heard with Justin Britt. Here's just a few Seahawk related. The top quarterback to receive a connection by passer rating from 2007 to 2016. Number three was Russell Wilson to Doug Baldwin at 119. I asked you this last week, Adam, but it's criminally underappreciated and underrated, that connection, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. If Baldwin was, you know, a few inches taller and could win the ball in the back of the end zone against, you know, double coverage, then I think he'd probably be up there with talking about with as maybe the best, as opposed to maybe the top 5 to 10 wide receivers in the league. He's such a good safety blanket, and you know, he probably is another guy that you could consider as one of our Jenga pieces that you would absolutely hate to lose. Certainly after Wilson on offense, he's probably the person I'd least like to have injured.
I'd agree. I think it's another stat from 2015. He led the league by six or seven with 12 touchdowns from the slot. if he plays out his years in Seattle, which he says he wants to, he could really challenge him, be challenging, if not pass Steve Largent, who just monopolizes every wide receiver reception touchdown record for the Seahawks. He could legitimately put that all those under threat. Russ, undervalued and underappreciated, isn't he, Mr. Baldwin?
Definitely. He is a phenomenal wide receiver. He's, in my eyes, he's as good as my favourite ever wide receiver, Steve Smith, and he plays exactly the same. And when we did that breakdown of him last season, his first step and his ability to juke a player is phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, 89, wearing 89, that's just perfect, yeah. Baldwin, and how he is. As Steve Smith has shown, he has a future in the media probably when his playing days are over. Also on Pro Football Focus, they put out the list of run stop percentage among cornerbacks. Well, I know Adam knows the answer to this, Ross might do as well because he may have listened. Number one in the NFL last year at cornerback for run stop percentage was, Ross,
Deshaun Shedd.
It was at 3.4%. Second, Adam.
Jeremy Lane.
Probably the most surprising one of the lot of all of the ones I've got, at 2.7%, and Richard Sherman was fourth at 2.4%. Two things on that: cornerback's run defense is something which isn't widely regarded as being important or universal in the league, but the fact that we have three of the top five, obviously three of the top four, that firstly says a lot about the players that we have in the defensive backfield, but also the scheme and the coaching they get, doesn't it, Russ?
The way they tackle as well, yeah. But they're just so well drilled in all facets of the game, and they just love to hit people, it seems, even though they're corners, and that's not really what they should be doing. Sherman can lay people out as well as anyone.
Yes, for me the tackling in the run game is what separates Sherman from every other cornerback in the league. Revis could do it a few years ago, but now Revis can barely do anything apart from get kicked out of nightclubs. But it says a lot about everything that goes into it, doesn't it, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly in the same way as our receivers like to block. I think part of being a Seahawks cornerback is that you've got to want to come up and make the tackle. I mean, it was Chris Harris Jr. on there because I heard a stat with him that over the last few years his tackle percentage is incredible, and he was saying some cornerbacks like to make a business decision, but if you want to be the best, then you got to come up and stop the running back every now and again and make the tackle, because that's as important a part of your job as the coverage in some plays.
Yeah, I do believe that Harris was third on that list. I don't actually have the rest of the list to hand. Also, with those three, the top five at cornerback, we also had the number three safety in run stop percentage in Cam Chancellor at 5.8%. That just echoes what we just said, doesn't it, guys?
Yeah, it's just all about hitting that player with the ball.
Yep, most definitely. But yeah, it's all... All told, the 2016 season looked a lot better on paper than it did actually watching it, didn't it, Pierce?
Yeah, it was miserable to watch at times, wasn't it?
Yeah. Adam?
I really didn't enjoy it overall. There were very few games where I felt like I was getting off my seat and really celebrating. One of them we were obviously at, but I think there was the Philadelphia game at home had a couple of really interesting, fun plays. Yeah. Carolina at home had a few really fun plays, and obviously the Patriots game was great, but I don't know, there were so many years in the past where you'd wake up on a Monday and you'd be like so proud of the team, but it just didn't really happen that much this year, I found. I really hope they can make up for it next year.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It was almost like a regretful haze. Like
the whole thing felt like just like a walking like death march into Atlanta, and we didn't want to say it, but deep down we all knew that as soon as we lost that Arizona game, that's how the season was going to end.
Yeah,
I'll agree. I think as Boss can attest to, there is quite a few Mondays like that when the WWE have a pay-per-view every 2 weeks. So yeah, it was kind of like a 12-month thing last year of the Seahawks season. But yeah, moving on. Last year on Pro Football Spot, myself, Ken Krasarowski, and Jacob Suzar on Pro Football Spot during the dead of the off-season put together a series of articles during the off-season looking at the 12 most important Seahawks. We quite smartly, I come up with the name, obviously, called it the Seahawks Dozen. It is the 12th most important Seahawks, either position groups or coaches, for then was the towards 2016 success. It was a really fun series to put together, and to put it together in the order we did, and it went down quite well. So this year, I'm going to do that all via this pedestrian podcast. We will be doing the compiling. It'll also run articles over on Pro Football Spot in the coming days and weeks. The first time to put the 12 together. You game for that, guys?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Right, we will do 12 to 6 on here for all for free, and then the top 5 with a bit deeper discussion on the 5. We will record them and put them up on Patreon when the time suits. But just to recap, 2016, the 12 from 12 to 1, red. 12 was Rawls, 2016, rookies at 11, KJ Wright at 10, Tyler Lockett at 9, Jimmy at 8, Wagner 7, Legion of Boom at 6, Doug at 5, Bennett at 4, the offensive line at 3, Pete Carroll at 2, and Mr. Russell Wilson was, in our eyes, the most important Seahawk for 2016's success. Now, with all that was injury relative, it was why Rawls was 12, Jimmy and Tyler were so low, because we didn't really know in last May or July, May, June, July, what part they were going to play in 16. So before we dive on 2017, thoughts on that order, chaps? Russ?
Yeah, it seems fair. I think you've got to put the injured players up there because you don't know what you're going to get. And the offensive line, the coach and the quarterback, I mean, for us, certainly, that's our most three most important positions.
Yeah, most certainly is. Adam?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, and I don't know if now's the time to bring out my Pete Carroll theory. I don't know if it's going to be too much of a cause too much chaos, but I'm gonna. Okay, right. This is my thing. Pete Carroll has been one of the most revolutionary coaches in the NFL, I would say. And if you look at if he was to retire tomorrow, his legacy would be that he has created one of the great Seahawk teams, one of the great NFL teams, and he has arguably changed entirely the way that, especially in defense, teams A play and B draft. I think, is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
However, sport moves on a rate of knots, and in the same way as English football will take maybe 3 or 4 years to move on, I find the NFL can often be like a year. Things can just change completely at the drop of the hat, and what was revolutionary can seem a little bit old hat. And I just wonder if we're starting to look a little bit tired. And so my Pete Carroll thing is, I'm a little bit worried that Pete Carroll is turning into Arsene Wenger.
If only there was a cup competition for us to win.
I knew that was coming because Adam said that a few weeks ago. And the waiting for a punchline is the best thing about some of Adam's tangents. But no, NFL is not for long. The not for long league and all that nonsense. Yeah. And it does teams and people catch up. And they most certainly did to the read option, which is why the aforementioned Colin Kaepernick is really struggled the last couple of years. But Pete Carroll, Arsene Wenger, I think he's a bit of a way from that. I just think he's wanting to jab Arsenal fans.
Well, no, but what I mean is that, you know, if let's assume that everything in the NFL happens 3 times faster.
Okay.
And, you know, it's very easy to spot, to say something once it's already been spotted. So what I'm doing is I'm just pointing out that maybe we've got a trend slightly whereby our head coach could potentially be slightly falling behind the times of what the greats and the young guys are able to do. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm not convinced that the way in which we tried to play last year is conducive to win.
Yeah, but I think there was a lot of outside things that went into. Obviously, injuries was something that was the most important thing to us last year, with rules and process never really getting a groove. Wilson playing on apparently thigh bones most of the season, it appeared. But I think to somewhat agree, I think this is the year, as we've said a few minutes ago, this is the year to really judge that on, when everything seems relatively, touch wood, healthy and primed for another big time run. Because the whole aura around the team during the OTAs, and I know Adam, you don't really put much weight in it, just seemed a lot different, a lot more energetic than it did last year. I think the the freshness that comes without playing in the Super Bowl, although it's what the whole end game is of every NFL team, NFL player, not playing in the Super Bowl sometimes benefits you the season after. I think that we saw with Carolina last year, we saw with Denver, although theirs was because they lost possibly one of the greatest ever quarterbacks. But we might see the same with Atlanta this year with Shanahan no longer there. It's what sets Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and the Patriots apart, so far apart from everyone else, because they don't get dragged down. They change things up. I mean, they've traded so many late round, mid round picks and got so much out of it. Their center, David Andrews, was from Oklahoma and he was undrafted, and now he's a multi millionaire. They trade for Kyle Van Noy, they trade for Jabal Sheard. They traded Jamie Collins.
Come on! Sorry, my bad.
And this the dangers of recording during a Wimbledon quarterfinal just come to roost. But yeah, I think this is the year to judge Pete Carroll on that path that you've just set out, more so than last year, I think.
Yeah, I think this is the year where it goes one of two ways this season. And if it doesn't go right, I wonder if there might be a few calls for a change.
Carroll out banners above the stadium.
Would not be surprised, obviously, if they... Isle of Wight Festival next year is a Carroll out banner.
Like, if we get thumped again in the same round in the playoffs,
questions will be asked.
I think questions will be asked.
Yeah, no, I'd agree, but that is a way off. I think the whole energy around the place seems a lot more upbeat, a lot more energized, a lot more positive than it did 12 months ago. On that, who do we have at 12 then, guys? The 12th most important Seahawk, not best, important Seahawk group or coach, if the team is to be a success in 2017. Russ, we'll suggest one, then we'll come to some sort of agreement.
Okay, well, you went with the injured guys at the end of the list last year. I'm going to go with Tyler Lockett. He was really getting into his groove when he got injured last season, and he's on for a massive year as the number two receiver if he can be the player he was before he got injured.
Yeah, Adam, agree, or anyone else?
I feel like I was supposed to do some research for this and actually write a list, which I very much do not have. But let's go with CJ Procise as my number 12. I reckon we can put Lockett maybe a little bit higher. I'll go CJ Procise as 12 because he's an X factor that if he's healthy, probably our two most impressive offensive games last year were the two in which he played or, featured. And so I wonder, I'm going to put him at number 12.
Yeah, that's who I was going to go for. So I think CJ Procise, he's the X factor no one really knows about, and the people who don't know how much of an X factor he is includes the Seahawks. So yeah, I think CJ Procise. Russ?
Yeah, I'm happy to go along with that. I love CJ Procise.
All right. Number 11, Adam, suggestion?
Number 11. I will go with Lockett again, but what I will do is I'll go with a dynamic duo of Lockett and Richardson, who I'm hoping can be used often, regularly, to basically just both run, fly, and post routes, go flying up and leave huge gaps in the middle for Baldwin and Jimmy.
Okay, Russ?
Yep, as a tandem, definitely, yeah. I did a depth chart for the season for the Seahawks podcast website, and I've had those two as my two and three receivers, so yeah, definitely.
So I've kind of gone the same way what I've wrote down. I've gone the actual depth at wide receiver behind, obviously, Doug Baldwin at tight end. So should we just leave it down to those two, or should we put the wider group? Obviously, that includes Jermaine Adam.
I mean, I'll have to leave Jermaine off this list as well. That's fine.
Yeah. Adam?
Yeah, let's go with what you've got. I like it.
Okay, cool.
Ten. Okay, go on, Rush. You have a go.
Okay. Can I put Jimmy Graham this low?
Oh,
I don't think you can.
No, I don't think you can.
No.
For me, Jimmy, I'm just trying to top up my...
Jimmy, for me, this year is top five.
Yeah.
All right, number 27 then, Eddie Lacy. he's got his job to make that. He's got a tough job on to make that his own job. And if he can, then we've got a brilliant, brilliant running back. But it's going to be tough to get past the other two guys.
Yeah, Adam.
I am going to go with. I feel like I should go with a defensive player here. I'm going to go with sort of like the third player in every position. So I'm going to go like sort of Frank Clark and Cassius Marsh, sort of the, and Jeremy Lane as a trio.
So like the, the rotation.
Yeah, but the specifically the number three player in the rotation of who I see are Lane, Marsh and Clark, because those three can be guys who will make the season for us if it all goes well and we can go back to having a rotation like in 2013, or if it doesn't work out, then we could end up being threadbare.
Okay, so for me, number 10, along the same lines, I think it's what we get from the rookies from this year. I think in the same way of rotation, adding McDowell to that to the defensive line rotation, adding all the four defensive backs, Shaquille Griffin, I can't remember the bloody names, Mike Tyson, Tedrick Thompson, and
Naz Jones, who Naz is Jones. Enormous.
All of, I mean, that the video from John Boyle's account from Hawaii for the Bennett camp he did over there, he is literally ginormous, is Naz Jones. But yeah, I think for me, I think you always want someone from the Rockies when you've got, was it 11 picks or whatever we had, all those defensive backs, someone like Pocic snuck in there as well. I think the Rockies this year are number 10 for me. So we've got sort of three different people.
I'm happy to go along with the rookies because we don't we as much as we want to know what we're going to get from them, we've got no idea at this point.
Yeah, Adam?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay. I'm enjoying winning arguments here, to be honest. Right, number 9. Adam?
I'm going to go with the... I know we've already sort of done rookies, but I'm going to go with the corner opposite Sherman.
Okay.
I know that's...
So with Deshaun Shedd's leg still in pieces, it sounds like...
He was running in the week, apparently.
Okay. Jeremy Lane and Shaq Griffin, yeah?
Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think I was good, but I was going to say Jeremy Lane, so I think he was... Even with the run defense, I think he was quite poor and quite clearly the spot where opposing offense is picked on in that defense with Richard Sherman playing at a level which people seem to just not realize he was playing at. Ross?
Yeah, I like that pick, but I'm going to go for Blair Walsh because we're seemingly going into the season with him as our kicker and people were unhappy last year with a really good kicker. Let's see how thrilled they are with Blair Walsh.
Yeah, I like that. I was going to go Jeremy Lane. So who are we putting at 9? I don't want to give you the deciding vote.
I don't want to put
Walsh. Yeah, let's go Blair Walsh. That's a good one. Okay. That's a good left fielder.
Yeah, especially with also the long snapper issues. I still don't know who that is this year.
I think we've got Tyler Ott as... Oh, we've still got Freeze as well, haven't we, both of those two?
Yeah. So that would be... It was something... Also, in that, John Ryan, I think Hawkbog is pointing out, was not... as good last year. I'm not too sure certain what role the long snapper issues played, but yeah, it's all going rather deep. Number 8, Russ.
This player's it only comes into play if Wilson gets injured, but it's the backup quarterback, whoever that is, because if Russ gets hit around again and gets injured in the first game like last season, if it's possibly worse, our season could be in tatters after the very first game. I want to say Boykin will be the backup.
Yeah, I think he will be.
But then I'm still holding out hope that if...
Which also makes the $800,000 we give Austin Davis even more ridiculous.
Well, yeah. But if Russ goes down week one, hopefully we're going to just pay cap whatever he wants if he's still out on the street.
if you have to pay the airfare from Ghana, but Adam,
yeah, I'm happy to go with that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was going to suggest the core Aloe B, Chancellor, Sherman, and Thomas, but I'm going to go with backup QB. So are we going Boykin or in particular, or just the general position?
Let's go to the position.
Yeah. Okay. Right, seven.
I'm happy to go with your core there.
The OG LOB.
Yeah.
Okay.
With a specifically Cam Chancellor.
Yes.
Okay. I'll put Cam down. Number six, Russ.
I want to go with... It's hard to leave him out of the top five, but Richard Sherman. He is still the best corner in the league, I think. I think all our players are the best in the league, obviously. But when he got tested last season, the Jets game is the prime example. He couldn't figure it out to start with, and as soon as he figured it out, Brandon Marshall was irrelevant for the rest of the game.
Yeah, I would possibly agree if I hadn't just put basically OG LOB at seven. I think he kind of falls into that. I think all three of them fall into that category of having to... With what we unknowns of the rookie as well, I think that would be where he falls. Six, Adam?
I'm going to go with the pass rush in general. I'm not going to pick individuals out. I mean, obviously, specifically Bennett and Averill, but in general, the pass rush, it's becoming a league where you really have to get so much pressure on the quarterback that if we can't manage that, then we're going to have big problems for the season. So I will go with the pass rush.
I'm really excited about the pass rush and the tackles this year.
Yeah, I think I'll go with pass rush. I think getting something from Malik and Nazir Jones, he's not much of a pass rush, he's a run defender. But also getting more from Jaron Reed in that way, seeing what Quinton Jefferson can do as well. Yeah. I think, that would be my number six. Well, as I said, that is 6-12 on the 2017 Seahawks. And all those will be written up and put on Pro Football Spot with a pretty cool graphic put together by, as ever, the graphic design master that is Gordon Curry. That was fun. If you agree or disagree, then comment on our football page, Facebook page, or on our various different Twitter accounts. It is a pretty fun debate to have as the season draws closer, and the 5-1 we will dive into in the next week or so and put it up on the Patreon for all the guys who have subscribed to that. Now, before last week's failure, we did ask and receive a few questions. No one heard our answers then, but they are going to now. So, Kian asks, with the NBA free agency in full swing, and obviously the salary cap and all the money that's been thrown at Steph Curry, Kyle Lowry and James Harden, if you could sign any player, last week we split it up, so we'll do it again. Any player, offensive and both offensive and defensive, money no object, who would you sign? Ross, defense first.
Khalil Mack, to complete our three, the best ever linebackers in the NFL.
Yeah. Adam?
I went with him last week as sort of a reach pick, and I'm going to go with him again. I'm going to go with Jadeveon Clowney, who I think is going to break out and be just an absolute star this year.
Yeah, I agree. For me, last week, it's the same again. It's the former Husky, and for me, the most underrated cornerback in the league. He's better than Patrick Peterson and all that other nonsense that comes to PP. It's Desmond Trufant for me. I think opposite Sherman, he just fits everything the same way Kev King did. Trufant was doing that 2-3 years ago coming out of Washington, and he's just gone up,
player,
gone through the gears and is legitimately a top three, top five cornerback in the league. For me, Dave Bailey asks, which player who gets cut at the cutdowns will have the most success elsewhere? And as Dave adds, and probably against the Seahawks. Adam?
I can't remember what I said for this.
No, me.
You broke my heart with this last week. That should give you a big indication of who you picked.
I think we said Cassius.
Oh, do we agree on that?
Maybe.
Cassius Marsh, yeah, probably right. Although I think he might end up sticking around for another year. But, no, I think I... Did I say... Tanner McAvoy?
Yes.
I think you did. I think I said Cassius Marsh just to poke Ross.
Just to warm me up.
But no, I think those two would be the two to look out for. I still think, as I said last week, I think Jermaine Kearse is more in danger than me, really. Possibly realise. I think it's still a long shot, but it's not as long a shot as people possibly would want you to believe. Also, I think maybe all the rookies, we've obviously been a rookie, they have some of them have the most room for growth. I think they could be a rookie like David Moore or Darbo or Mike Tyson. He could just go and fit in somewhere else in Atlanta or somewhere else and really be a success, because we just don't know what we're getting or had. Tom Harris asks, what position is our weakest area going into the new season, Adam?
It is the offensive line by a million miles.
Yeah, it's hard to realize. I think, yeah, it's
it might be better than last year, but even at its, in my opinion, at its highest point, it will still be our worst position group.
Yeah, I'd agree. Ross...
Kickers aren't real people.
It's Blair Walsh. Why have we got Blair Walsh? God damn it.
But Blair Walsh was a top five, top kicker before we give him the yips a couple of years ago.
He's been missing everything in the off season.
Yeah. He's also not five times worse than Stephen Hauschka, which the money would dictate.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Get Dan Carpenter, he's available.
No, but Dan, no.
He's a grizzly man.
Blair Walsh is a decent. I'm probably cursing him and going to have this like isolated for future podcasts. But I don't think Blair Walsh is that bad. I think it is. Yeah, I think the one area I do want us watch for depth wise is linebacker, because we signed about 15 middle linebackers. So it would be interesting to see how that shakes out. We haven't really obviously replaced Mike Morgan, who didn't really replace Bruce Irvin, and that is a position which is clearly changing in the NFL, with every team just basically playing a nickel DB. But it will be something interesting to watch. Andy Robertson asks, going back on our favourite topic, Russell Wilson, obviously Shale Capadia over on ESPN wrote a really cool piece on Wilson's somewhat unfathomable diet, Adam. Andy Robinson wants to know, is he getting mega fit? Is it true, Adam?
I mean, this can be marked down as something that I could literally not care less about. but yeah, apparently he's eaten nearly 5,000 calories or something, and that is going to make him lose weight. So, you know, whatever works for him, I guess.
Yeah, it is a pretty cool article, but again, with the Russell Wilson robotic nature that he has, hours after it dropped, he tweeted a Instagram or Twitter tweet about not being able to eat mac and cheese. I'm just like, oh, come on, man. Then.
Did you see the video of him, though? It's his own passing academy that he's put on.
No.
He looks very muscly, very stocky. Like he's put on a lot of muscle rather than...
Yeah, I did see that, actually.
He looks big, which I like, because he's not going to get injured as much if he's that big.
Yeah, but also at the same time, is he going to be able to run away from people as quick as he has in the past? I mean, if you go back and watch, I think someone posted the Bills game and we put like 50-odd points on up again in Toronto, and he's on a different level in terms of speed and breakaway speed than he was the last couple of years. So it's finding that balance, I think, and if it's hopefully not too much to the detriment of his... running ability, because that is what sets him apart from other quarterbacks in the league in certain aspects. But yeah, thanks for all the questions. If you want to get in touch, you can over all the various Twitter and Facebook pages and profiles and all sort. We will plug all those in a few. But now for a couple, true or false, Russ?
Yeah, let's go with this one. Adrian Peterson is going to be the NFL's leading rusher this season, as he seems to think he is.
False. Adrian Peterson is more likely to be in the Fox studio for Wildcard Weekend as an analyst as he is the NFL lead in Russia this year.
32 years old, coming up to massive injuries.
Yeah, he's done. I don't understand what the Saints are doing. Mark Ingram's not that bad. No. Adam?
I don't think he'll be done. I think he might have a couple of flashes, but I can't see him doing anything of real note.
Didn't the Saints draft a running back as well?
Yeah.
My true or false, which I wasn't expecting us to have to do today, so I'm going to have to sort of make a long sentence whilst I'm trying to think of something.
Every podcast.
The best two teams in the NFL are in the AFC.
True.
False. because of the Packers, annoyingly.
The Packers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they've sorted that defense a little bit and added Martellus Bennett. They're going to score a lot of points this year.
I think NFC is what a case of what have you done for me lately. So until they prove otherwise, the best team in the NFC is the Falcons. I think the Packers are possibly up there with us, but the AFC is just ludicrous. When New England fall off the Brady cliff, which is coming in the next couple of years, it's going to be really interesting to see who takes that spot, and if it's not like the NFC, just going to be a rotation of teams. But for sure, the AFC has the stronger claim to that. So I believe it to be true. Before we start recording, Ross went through a few requests of bets which various betting companies are offering on the 2017 NFL season. Two of them were involving two Pro Bowlers who, whether they could last the season. So I'm going to bring them into one true or false. Rob Gronkowski and Ben Roethlisberger do not play more than 25 games, are not active for more than 25 games combined in the regular season. So it's obviously 32 games they play, they'll miss at least 7 combined. True or false?
It's going to be false, isn't it?
Yeah.
One of them's going to get a serious injury or a couple of week injury, definitely.
Yeah. Adam?
I don't really like sort of doing that for injuries, but so the bet is that they'll play more than 25 games between
The bets are that is it Gronkowski's will play all 16 and he's 10-1.
Well, they'll be active for all 16.
Active for 16.
Yeah, Gronk's 10-1 and Roethlisberger's 3-1 to be declared active for all games.
I think Gronkowski will get injured. I think Ben will be fine.
Okay, cool. There is one thing. Keegan's question, are there offensive and defensive players? We didn't do offensive players. So, offensive player, if money was no object. Adam?
Odell Beckham.
Yeah, for me, it's Julio Jones. Pro Football Focus, again, have put up a pretty cool stat line, stat tape, tail of the tape from 2016. Richard Sherman got a lot of criticism for how he dealt with Julio over the two games. In those two games, Julio Jones had 11 targets, 7 receptions, 79 yards, and 1 touchdown, a passer rating of 115.3. You put that alongside what Julio Jones did the other 19 weeks in the season, and that's just really impressive. But Julio Jones is the one person with a slight look and wink towards Dez Bryant, but Julio Jones is the offensive player for me. Russ?
Taylor Lewan, the Titans left tackle, who's young, he's an animal, and can be a left tackle in this league for the next 10 years or so.
Yeah, also I think I prefer Jack Conklin because he was my boy last year in the draft as well. But yeah, one more Pro Football Focus thing, because they really are churning out stuff. They have started a foundation draft, which is the players they would, from 1 to 32, who they build a team around. Number 1 was Aaron Rodgers. Number 2 was Luck. Number 3 was Wilson. That sounds about right, doesn't it? He's ahead of Carr, Prescott, Winston, Mariota, and Matt Ryan. Adam?
This is for a draft for the future that you keep the player for years.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're starting, if the team was starting, a team was starting today, they would take Rodgers at 1, Luck at 2, and Wilson at 3.
That sounds probably about right. I mean, I'm not convinced that Andrew Luck necessarily deserves such lauding after the couple of years that he's had, but I'll go with it.
Yeah, I think I would as well. Ross?
Is it odd that I'd still take Brady first? Because like you said a minute ago, what have you done for me lately? Well, he's just won everything forever.
Yeah, but also Rodgers has got 8 to 10 years left. Luck's got 15 maybe years left. Russell Wilson's got about the same. Carr's got the same. Prescott's got the same.
I'm all about short-term success.
Yeah, that's possibly why you're not a general manager. It's one reason you're not a general manager, possibly.
One of a few reasons, yeah.
If you build a foundation around a 39, 40-year-old quarterback, then you'll be picking top 2-3 quite often, I think. But yeah, that's all we really have to cover on this week's podcast. Where can people get all of this goodness and all of us on social media for our various reasons, Ross?
Okay, if you want to hear the top five of our Seahawks dozen, go head over to the www.patreon.com/thepedestrianpodcast, where for $1 a month you can get a lovely pedestrian podcast sticker and access to some weekly betting tips. Some of them are good, some of them are awful from me. For $3 a month, you can join us in a fantasy league next season. For $5, you get bonus podcasts. And for $12 a month, we will publicise you to heavens as the show sponsor for that month. You can get the podcast from thepedestrianpodcast.podbean.com, which, if you don't want to use Apple products, which some people don't for some reason, go and get it from there. And then Twitter and Facebook, UK Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, and myself on Twitter is at @Stu_Court. Ross is at @RossBow1984. Adam and his Andrew Murray and Love Island tweets is on Adam D. Nathan. But massive thanks for listening to this week's off-season chat. And just a quick message to the Seahawkers guys: if you come at the Kings, you best not miss.
I'm an award-winning podcaster. Go Hawks.
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks, Super Bowl 48 champions.